The presidential motorcade had just passed through heavy crowds in downtown Dallas.
Destroying the media lies and dismantling the narratives. One story at a time. It's the Adrian Slade Show.
If Trump doesn't get reelected, it's going to be a bloodbath, y'all. A bloodbath! Bodies in the streets, blood pouring everywhere. He said so at a rally. He's going to have his mega militia out there, you know, grannies with fanny packs on and drinking Chardonnay out of Yeti cups. They're going to be marching, and they're going to be marching to the sounds of the war drums of Lee Greenwood's Proud to Be an American. Everybody's going to die, because that's typically the premise of any, you know, left-wing conclusion of a Republican win. I'm Adrian Slade. Thanks for tuning in. Yeah, so Trump had a rally. When he wasn't trying to slice the balls off of his former opponent, Ron DeSantis, treating him like ISIS, which we could talk about that later. I don't know what he was doing with that. It didn't make any sense. But he had a rally, and, you know, his rallies are always full of bluster and, you know, hooting and hollering, and he's cracking jokes and mocking people and what have you. But he said something about losing the election and it being a bloodbath. And, man, did the media just go ape? You know what with that? They just took off to the races and just went crazy online with the narrative. This was the new Charlottesville narrative. I made the joke about that. And then the clip I'm about to play, he says it. He actually said it on the Sunday morning show. But I made the joke saying that this is the Charlottesville narrative. This is the scheme where Trump said, you know, there was white supremacists and there were good people on both sides, when he really said that there was good people on both sides and there was white supremacists and Antifa. But the left took that little clip out of context and just went with it. You had NBC News out there. Trump says there will be a bloodbath if he loses. CBS News, an Ohio rally, Trump says there'll be a bloodbath. Rolling Stone, Trump says there will be a bloodbath and elections and what have you. I mean, Politico, reaction to Trump's speech. When is a bloodbath not a bloodbath? When he said what he said, because you're about to find out. Oh, they took that out of context. MSNBC, Trump says there will be a bloodbath if he loses the election. That one got community noted, but that was what we heard. News media, they were able to take the clip. They were able to run with it. They were able to go on about how Trump said there would be a bloodbath. And we have to realize that he called for an insurrection, which he actually told people to, you know, protest peacefully and what have you. But no, we have to worry about the threat of the MAGA people, the maggots, as the left likes to call them. And here is a gentleman on MSNBC, on Jen Psaki, the former spokesperson for the current presidential administration. Here is what he said about the bloodbath.
What I heard was a continuation of the same rhetoric, the same endorsement of political violence that we've seen from Donald Trump for years, as you pointed out. It goes even farther back, right? This is the same guy who, after Nazis marched on Charlottesville and killed a woman, said there were very fine people on both sides.
Oh, and not to be outdone, we have this angry gentleman who is going on about Trump's bloodbath.
So Donald Trump at his Nazi rally in Ohio yesterday was ginning up more violence, promising that there will be a bloodbath in this country if he loses again. Another bloodbath. So he's promising, he's warning of another J6.
So now, what did Trump actually say? Well, listen to the full clip, and you can hear what he was talking about with the bloodbath.
Mexico has taken, over a period of 30 years, 34% of the automobile manufacturing business in our country. Think of it. Went to Mexico. China now is building a couple of massive plants where they're going to build the cars in Mexico and think that they're going to sell those cars into the United States with no tax at the border. Let me tell you something to China. If you're listening, President Xi, and you and I are friends, but he understands the way I deal, those big monster car manufacturing plants that you're building in Mexico right now, and you think you're going to get that, you're going to not hire Americans, and you're going to sell the cars to us now, we're going to put a 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line, and you're not going to be able to sell those guns. If I get elected, now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole. That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That'll be the least of it. But they're not going to sell those cars. They're building massive factories.
Oh, he was talking about Mexico and China. That if he loses the election, because he would be the one to handle that, along with the border, that there would be a bloodbath if he loses. Huh. He's kind of right. I mean, we have an unprecedented flow of illegal immigrants, terrorists. There was a guy that was from Hezbollah. He was just busted. It's insane what's happening at the border. And Biden's not going to do it. He's flying them in. He's flying them in from Colombia. I mean, he's cutting the razor wire when he can. And when he can't, he's putting them on planes and flying them out of Central America because of climate change. You know, they can't farm because of the drought. So we got to fly them in so we can bring all the terrorists in from Venezuela and they can kill people like Lake and Riley. Or, you know, we can have the Haitians come across the boats, come across the seas away from barbecue, the cannibal mafia terrorist leader down in Haiti who now runs the country because it's a poop hole country, as Trump once said. Yeah. This is the media doing what they do, and we're watching it in real time. They're building the narrative because they know that their audience, the thing people don't realize is they go, okay, well, Fox News was the highest rated news organization of all. And you've got these conservative outlets, Daily Wire and The Blaze, and you know, they're making waves on the digital space. So, you know, the thought leaders should be, you know, the Republicans should be able to lead the way. Well, it's different when you're going up against one high-rated network, which I wonder how high-rated they are now, and you're going up against two digital platforms. But then on the other side, you know, it's death by a thousand paper cuts. They're getting you on every area, airports and CNN. Well, they don't have that exclusivity anymore, but CNN, MSNBC, New York Post, New York Times, Washington Post, you know, it's coming from all angles. It's on local news. It's being parroted on. I heard Brian Sicknick was killed on January 6th. You know, he was the Capitol Police officer because he was hit in the head with a fire extinguisher and he died. I heard that for 6 months on my local news. Local newscasters talked about this all the time. And I kept saying, that didn't happen. Didn't stop it. And so the narrative gets set. The people that only follow those news stories, the people you run into at work at the water cooler who are disengaged, they're going to think Trump is calling for a bloodbath. And they're going to say, oh, we can't have that kind of rhetoric. You know, we need to have more Haitian Haitian cannibals eating corpses of their enemy. We need to have more Venezuelan drug cartels and Venezuelan trafficking cartels come across the border. We need more inflation. We need more crime-ridden streets. We need more of that instead of, you know, bloodbath talk over here from the guy who at least gave us a good economy and at least tried to build a wall and at least move the embassy to Jerusalem. At least didn't have us in four different wars across the globe, culminating in a world war. But the left is making the narrative now, and the left has it rolling, and they're trying every angle possible. So now Trump likes to have some humor in his speeches, right? This is just so unbelievable. So you have this article, Laughter, the new symbol of the far left. Now, this is because of the fact that people on the right have found a way to effectively mock the left, whether it's memes and whether it's tweets and whether it's videos that, you know, mock them. Granted, we should be doing more like activism, like actually going out and if we're going to ballot harvest, at least engage in that. Thank God the RNC's got Scott Pressler on board. And even though I'm not a fan of Laura Trump, the other guy from North Carolina, he's clean house in the RNC because they've already blown all of the money that they were going to use on other candidates. But so mockery is an effective tool. And then we get this article from Politico in on the joke, the comedic trick Trump uses to normalize his behavior. His supporters love it. Critics call it a sign of his autocratic tendencies. They actually had some, what was the tweet where they said Trump often used jokes and laughter to normalize his behavior, a trick used by autocrats in the past. Okay. You know what the communists did? They actually wrapped their speeches in pop culture music events. Huh, we don't see that at South by Southwest or Bonnaroo or Coachella or anything like that. Politico, quote, "I've been indicted more times than Alfonso Capone," Donald Trump said, from the stage at Winthrop Coliseum in Rock Hill, South Carolina. "It's true," he said. "It's not." But what mattered the most was that here he was, late last month, uncorking an especially lively version of what has become a routine rally riff, and one that never fails to send ripples of giggles through the crowds he commands. Quote, "My parents are looking down. They're saying, I never thought this could happen to my son. He's been indicted," he says, hands out, head up, reveling in the hoots on cue. The audio track of the traveling Trump carnival is now reliable to the point of ritualistic. Lee Greenwood to start off. There it is. The odd QAnon-corrupted sort of liturgical dirge to close the event, the apocalyptic assessments of the condition of the nation, and the prompts to harass the press, and the jeers and the swears from the throngs in between. I could shut my eyes and know precisely where I was. For me, though, there's one sound that's come to stick out more than many others. It's the laughter. These signature set pieces are an utter engine, of course, of Trump's stubborn and undeniable appeal. The humor's always played a part, and repeated ridicule of his rivals to more impromptu, innocuous asides to physical pantomimes. The resulting laughter, a consistent and key piece of their cadence and pull. This isn't new, and Trump obviously is far from the first president or poll with some capacity for comedy. Over the past few months, at events that I've seen and I've been to in Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, it felt to me particularly conspicuous. His destabilizing rhetoric has gotten even more dark. It's what made the laughter all the more stark. His allies and aides, it's a big part of the reason the former and maybe the future president still registers as relatable, managing to maintain the useful reputation as a politically incorrect outsider despite his obvious insider status as leader of the GOP. His critics, along with his experts in rhetoric and nationalist and populist movements and leaders, say it helps him turn his opponents into not just enemies but jokes. They say it helps him recast his own liabilities as laughing matters and desensitizes his supporters to his most outrageous comments and proposals, undermining of institutions, the abandonment of allies. Let's talk about that for a second. Undermining of institutions? They've undermined themselves, spying on citizens, using the Justice Department to frivolously attack an individual. They are responsible for their own undermining. Anyways, mass deportations and all but outright invitations for Russian invasions and so on. They say the mirth masked the menace. It's just ridiculous, this article. Both sides are not wrong. Donald Trump and his ability to bring you in with his humor, former Trump White House principal deputy press secretary Hogan Gidley said. And it is really is kind of one of his best characteristics. It humanizes him in a way that I think a lot of politicians are scared of and wouldn't do or can't do. Yeah, well, they spent all this time on the left dehumanizing him, making him into the one person that isn't allowed to have due process, speedy trial, his own autonomy, you know, his own being spied upon, having his house raided so that he can find the materials that they planted that show that he didn't do January 6th and that it was actually the feds that did it. The CIA was hanging out there with their dogs. I mean, we just learned that the other day. Why is the CIA out there by the DNC and RNC headquarters? First, they are not supposed to use their assets on domestic soil, but then at the same time, how were they utilized so quickly to get there before the bombs and before the rally was happening? I don't know. It's weird, especially when we played that clip of Mike Benz talking about how the CIA partners with the State Department to take down regimes. If you remember, at the end of the episode, I said, are they doing a color revolution on us? Is January 6th a part of the color revolution? It is the Reichstag fire, where the Germans burned down their capital state house and blamed it on the Jews, which allowed Hitler to go in with his forces and execute Jews at random. I don't know. Seems similar, doesn't it? He's always been funny. Back to the article. Jen Mercia, for the author of Demagogue for President, the rhetorical genius of Donald Trump, told me, branding and framing his foes in ways that undermines their credibility and reaffirms the us versus them polarization, all under the guise of just joking. You know why a joke is effective? Because it's based off of truth. And if these people weren't the characteristics that he has branded and framed them to, most of the times, look, it didn't work on DeSantis. They couldn't get Meatball Ron to work. They couldn't get DeSanctimonious. That was lame. It might have stuck with some of his hardcore crazies, but it sure didn't, like, hurt him. Not like low-energy Jeb or low-energy Joe. Not like, you know, the way he framed Jeb Bush. And, I mean, those things stuck to where people still call them that. I mean, they tried it with Lying Ted. That didn't work because it wasn't based in truth. The ones that are funny, the ones that stick, are based in truth. And if he's reframing these people, and if they're polarizing, it's because they've polarized everyone on their own, and Trump is pointing it out and finding funny ways to do it. So you saw the narrative. He gets up there, he riffs. They don't like the fact that he's normalized. They don't like the fact that he's humorous. And he is more on top of his game than Biden is. You see Joe Biden out there. In fact, Trump turned it into a Visiting Angels commercial. But they're walking him around like he's like at a memory center. I mean, so we've got the guy who should be in a memory center, who's completely lost, so much so that he can't be put on trial because of Robert Hur's investigation, who said he's so old and feeble that he shouldn't be tried for having classified documents that he shouldn't have had in his home, in his garage, when he was not only just vice president, when he didn't have a clearance of that level, also, or the ability to declassify him, when he was a private citizen, too. He had these classified documents about Ukraine. That's interesting. He made a lot of money in Ukraine, him and his family that don't have business there, but have business there. So the narrative was created to pull a line, find the perfect line, pull it, and let's frame him as a dictator, which we had him for 4 years. He was not a dictator. I would say the one who's in office, who conducted a Reichstag fire like Nazi Germany and put his political prisoners in jail for 4 years without due process or a speedy trial, letting them rot in solitary confinement. That, to me, sounds very dictatorial. I don't know about you. But looking at it from the angle of what the media does, instead of spending the time to dig in on things that are important, they just decided we have to find a way to vilify this guy, and let's just take a thing out of context and roll with it. So we've got the Memory Center candidate, and then we've got the crazy cussing Christian nationalists, because this is the new thing that they've also targeted. New York Times, piety and profanity. The raunchy Christians are here. In the Trump era, a surprising number of evangelicals are rejecting modesty and turning towards risque. And they talk about that calendar we talked about where it had Riley Gaines and Sarah Gonzalez and Josie the redheaded libertarian and Dana Loesch. I love Dana Loesch. Love Sarah Gonzalez. I mean, they're good commentators. They all have good insight and good shows. This is from the article. The, quote, conservative dads, Real Woman of America 2024 pinup calendar features old school images of sexiness, bikinis, a red sports car, a bubble bath. The models are influencers and aspiring politicians familiar to the very online pro-Trump right. In one image, Blaze TV host in a short skirt lights a copy of the New York Times on fire with a cigar. Another model, the former NRA spokesman Dana Loesch, hoists two rifles, published by a woke-free beer company, hastily launched last year as an alternative to Bud Light. The calendar was clearly meant to provoke liberals, But when the photos of it began circulating in December online, progressives did not pay attention. Instead, it sparked a heated squabble on the right over whether conservative dads who happen to be Christian should reject the calendar on moral grounds or embrace it as an irreverent win for the good guys. Now, here's a couple things that run very similar to what you heard about with Trump. It's what the left is afraid of. They're afraid of the fact that we've taken angles that they used to have, you know, doing pinups, doing comedy, you know, doing pictorials of women in bikinis, having things that were culturally moving, and the right has finally found a way to do it and do it in a way that doesn't sully their brands, that doesn't take it to the level of Dylan Mulvaney up there singing about how it's, you know, girlhood time or whatever that horrible dirge is that he decided to put up, that sugary pop garbage. But they're mad that there's influencers, that there's politicians that are attractive and that can move the needle culturally. They don't like the fact that they rip on the news media. You know, Sarah Gonzalez burning up the New York Times. They're mad about that with a cigar. They're mad about Donald Trump telling his people to mock the media because that's them. They own the media. They're the ones making the narrative right now, trying to frame Trump in the press as committing bloodbaths. Then they don't like the fact that we found alternatives, you know, the alternative economy, because we have a woke-free beer. No, you're supposed to stick with the products that they've co-opted, that they've decided to weaponize against your values. You're supposed to use the cell phone company Verizon or AT&T because they're going to use that money to weaponize and allow DEI to explode, to allow ESG to run Christians out of you know, out of just doing business in an economy, and so that they can make us bow down to LGBTQ and bow down to forced systemic racism. I mean, these things are being systematically implemented in boardrooms and organizations. You're not going to get capital if you don't abide by these rules. If anything is systemic and systemic racism, it would be that. You're building a system, a process that causes racism. And they're mad that we found an alternative economy where somebody can go, you know what? I don't like Bud Light. I don't want them putting out this crap with Dylan Mulvaney. I'm going to make my own beer. And then they also have their David Frenches on the side who write this hypocritical garbage to where if they see something culturally moving, like, you know, movies that the right has finally found a way to make good content in the movie sphere with the pinup calendars, with, you know, good marketing and branding, then they have to have some moral case for why the old school Buckley conservatism doesn't align with this garbage or some nonsense like that. And then they can turn around and see, we ignored it because we're progressives and we're the majority, apparently. That's what they think. And so we're too good for it. And it wasn't good. So we all ignored it, even though it was really good. And then the David Frenches on the right can put out these stupid hit pieces on it. And then the bow tie wearing, you know, conservative nerds can get on there and talk about how it's against values. You need to have, you know, wear dresses down to your ankles and you can't be attractive and be on the right, which, I mean, most of the women I see on the right, pretty daggone hot. You know, I mean, it's like going to a Sunday church, meeting that nice blonde out there. I mean, I think, you know, it's the ones on the left that are just like, they're miserable and they're always complaining and they just look like they're having a horrible life. It's just unbelievable. But, you know, they are mad that we're circumventing their narratives and their methods. You know, we're talking bloodbaths. Mehdi Hassan's out there. Call me crazy. If you have incited an armed mob, echoed the rhetoric of mass shootings and Hitler himself and praised Nazis, you don't get to use the word bloodbath and then scream, but context. Well, we just heard the context. And Mehdi, you don't get to have a show for, what, half a year as a pro-Palestinian terrorist-loving thug. I mean, on the lowest-rated network. I mean, come on. But, you know, this is where we're at. I mean, we've got the crazy dementia-ridden corn pop memory center having president going up against the cussing Christian nationalist MAGA, you know, comedian. And then we've got the alternative to all of that, RFK Jr. Why are people backing this guy as if he's some conservative alternative? The guy's great on the vaccine. Good. There, and that needs to be handled, and it's going to be handled by Ron DeSantis in Florida with the Florida legislature and Dr. Latipo, and they're working right now. People just haven't been talking about it, but they're working, and it's going to come out. And I'm fine if it has to come out on the state level, because Donald Trump's not going to do it. He's going to keep praising Operation Warp Speed, which I the only thing I can think of is he's doing it because of the monoclonal antibody part. And the vaccines. He keeps talking about the vaccines, but that's the losing issue for him. But RFK Jr. to name attorney Nicole Shanahan as running mate for president. Now, we heard Aaron Rodgers. I don't know how that's going to work. We heard Jesse the Body Ventura, Jesse the Mind. Remember that guy? The conspiracy theorist who was, I mean, I liked him when he wrestled, but he turned out to be a really crazy nut job. But Whitney Webb found something interesting about Ms. Shanahan, and the fact that Mr. you know Ventura and Mr. Rogers are no longer in the mix. The director of Shanahan's foundation is simultaneously part of Open Philanthropy, which influenced Event 201, a pandemic simulation RFK Jr. has routinely criticized and is mainly funded by Facebook co-founder Dustin Moskovitz. So Event 201, I've talked about this on the program, but if you don't know what it is, as the pandemic was starting, before we knew about it here in the United States, November 2019, in New York, they decided to have a pandemic drill called Event 201. Listen to who was sponsoring it. John Hopkins University. They were involved with the whole COVID vaccine thing. The World Economic Forum. Great reset, anybody? Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, huh? That's interesting. And so they had a pandemic drill right before an actual pandemic. And it was about a coronavirus. Right before an actual coronavirus. And they were giving out stuffed coronavirus plushies with the swag bags. I mean, the video, it was like it was prophetic. Lockdowns, all this stuff was discussed. And then we did it. And this person's involved with RFK Jr.'s running mate. Whitney Webb said, an Open Philanthropy and Event 201, Open Philanthropy was also tied to the FTX scandal through Sam Bankman-Fried's ties to the group via effective altruism. We did a whole thing on effective altruism, if you remember that. How it's just, you know, virtue signaling. Look at me. I'm using your money that I'm investing and I'm doing great things with it. I'm going to show up to the board meetings, look like I just woke up after taking bong hits on the college campus. I'm not even going to put on clean clothes. I'm going to sleep in the lobby and I'm not even going to get my hair combed. I'm going to show up to the meeting, but I'm giving all my money away. I'm making a lot of money, but I'm just giving it away. Everybody wins, you know. You get a car. Yeah, that's who RFK Jr. is supporting. We're going to have that possible. There's no alternatives. At this point, all we have is Donald Trump, because we know what we're going to get from him for 4 years. We had it. I'm kind of with Ben Shapiro. Ben Shapiro's like, yeah, this is who, because if you remember that Substack article I wrote the day after Iowa, I said, DeSantis, step out now. If you can't win Iowa because there's overwhelming support for Trump, then what do you think the rest of the primaries are going to do? Iowa always gave us Mike Huckabee, Rick Santorum, instead of Mitt Romney and John McCain. You might as well go with Donald Trump at this point, because he's going to do a clean sweep and get out quick before you destroy your brand, unlike Nikki Haley did. But at this point, Ben Shapiro's talking about how he's not only going to back him, he's going to fundraise for him. And he's basically, because we got communists that are burning the country down, and he can't even make coherent statements. I mean, what is that going to look like in 4 more years? So this is the whole narrative that you're seeing. The bloodbath narrative is garbage, and it's going to only build. The primary season's only going to get more nuts. as we go along. I'm Adrian Slade. Thanks for tuning in. I've got some interesting content coming up on maybe CBDCs and things of that nature. I've been researching some things, so I know I've been out for a couple weeks, and I'm back now. We are in our busy season at work, and you know, that's one of the factors, but really, I really wanted to find some stuff that was worthy of your time. And I thought, even though it's silly, the news media narratives that we're familiar with, I felt like being able to highlight the crafting of it, the sausage making of it in real time, you know, that there was some worthiness to that. There was some value to it. So hopefully you enjoyed it. I'll see you guys next time.